House Committee on Land Use for Thursday, April 9th, 2009. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3100. The record will show that this is the second public hearing on this bill. And we have several sheets of people who are here to testify on this bill. Colleagues, I have asked the director of the department to be available to the committee at the conclusion of the public testimony so that he can address issues that have been raised in public testimony both on Tuesday and on today. So I hope he is keeping a running tally today as well as Tuesday. I also would like the committee to know that I've extended an invitation to Jefferson County to participate when we go into work session on this bill, and they are interested in doing that, and so we will advise them, and they will be part of our invited testimony during the work session.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner. Representative Cowan.
There are also representatives here from Jefferson County today. If there are questions that come up with the director, they're available.
Thank you. Yes, I have talked with them too. So thank you. Let's start by acknowledging testimony that we have received on this bill. Vice Chair Esquivel?
I'd love to, Madam Chair, but I left my glasses and I can't read it.
Would you like to borrow some?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's perfect. For the record, testimony regarding House Bill 3100 submitted for the record without public testimony is the following. Ted Brownrigg, President, Deschutes County Chapter of Trout Unlimited, Norman Christensen, Mike and Marilyn Dufield, Jolan Estimo Ascentio, Confederate Tribes of the Warren Springs, Ascentio Gould, Deschutes County, Gary and Linda Gustafson, William Hicks, Catherine Hun, Katie Kruger, Melinda McDonald, Brian Moore, Francis and Michael O'Brien, Dr. Robert F. Powers, and John Sterling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it very much.
Glad to be of service. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. Vice Chair Garrett, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, we also have testimony from Ronald and Patricia Brown, Judy Clinton, Mark Fairbanks, Mary Hogan, Joel Jorgensen at Deschutes County, Jonathan Manton at Deschutes County, Robert and Ann Maxwell of Florence, Alan T. Moore, David Pietka of Deschutes County, Jack Remington of Deschutes County, Cheryl Schatt, Katie Sengstake, Kathy Shaver, and Tim Tabor.
Thank you. Our record will be augmented by the testimony we've received from those parties. I will also note for the record that Jefferson County, who testified last week, has brought written documents to add to our record that reflect their testimony from last week, so that is also available to the committee. To those who have come to testify on this bill, we are anxious to hear what your thoughts are on this bill. We are not quite as overwhelmed, although we may have some more people to testify. Out of respect for everyone who's here, in order to make sure we hear from everyone, we are going to limit testimony to 2 minutes. We have a tiny bit more flexibility today than we did Tuesday. But I will nonetheless, in order for the committee to be able to have access to the director and representatives of Jefferson County, let's try to keep to the two-minute limit as well. And I'd like to ask you to come up in groups of three so that we can be as efficient with our time as possible. Ms. Ross will provide a little warning for you. She'll be our timekeeper and give you a 30-second notice so that you can make your most important points and make sure that gets on the record. Joe Rohleder, Jennifer Severide, and Al Elkins. On deck, we will have Eric Kanzler, Keith Kohlberg, and David Schreiner.
See you there.
And although I've read your names, it would be helpful if you would begin your testimony by giving us your name and either the group you're representing or your county of residence, so that our recording device has that information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. The Oregon Hunters Association is a one of our state's largest conservation groups with over 11,000 members in the state of Oregon, and we spend about $250,000 a year of our own money in access and habitat programs around the state. We're here in support of House Bill 3100. Our testimony, basically, Madam Chair, members of the committee, is excerpts from the Motalias Area Critical State Concern Report by LCDC, and the points that speak to the winter range, the summer range for the mule deer populations and the elk populations, and also the diseases that some developments may cause within the herds, and the access routes of the resorts that travel through the Goal 5 winter range is mapped by Jefferson County. So that's what our testimony focuses in on. And I also have a statement there from the U.S. Forest Service in relation to the transition areas and winter range and summer range in relation to the developments. That concludes our testimony.
Thank you very much. Ms. Severide? Thank
you. Oh, I get two. Twice as loud. My name is Jennifer Severide, and I reside at 13170 Southwest Forest Service Road, Camp Sherman, Jefferson County. I thank you for the opportunity to voice my opinion. Governor Kulongowski has stated that the objective of implementing an ACSE management plan on the basin is to protect the waters of the Motalias and the fish and wildlife resource in the basin. If you take this quote at its word, one would assume that the entire basin is of critical concern, and yet the rulings only apply to new development. In my testimony to the LCDC, I pose the following questions. Would the plan include a commitment from the Forest Service to not renew any of the 104 cabin leases as they come up for renewal, and to then demolish those existing cabins and their septic tanks and return the sites to natural habitat? The final management plan did not include this commitment. I highly question the idea of imposing a plan on the basin that by omission allows property owners to be grandfathered into continuing their current usages and practices, even if they are doing harm. I question why this would be the case. And again, specifically, if the objective of the law is to protect the waters of the Motalias and the fish and wildlife resources. If new property owners are to be required to minimize wildfire risk and the cost of protection from wildfire, should then the Forest Service be allowed to continue prescribed burning and fire research programs in the basin? Would it be the intention of this plan that the streamside trails along the river be pulled back to enhance and protect the riparian zone? Would this plan address the numerous campsites along the river and the probability that their continued usage will cause damage to the natural habitat of fish and wildlife and have ill effects on the water quality? Would the plan address private property decorative water features fed by the waters of Lake Creek, Spring Creek, and the Motalias River? None of these issues have been addressed or adopted, and as a result, I don't buy into the "these resorts will destroy an Oregon jewel" theory, especially as the proposed solutions only apply to those you think might do harm and not to those that are currently doing so. I am very much opposed to what I see as the eradication of the county's authority to govern local land use issues. There was a time in which the governor believed in the process and stated, "I support following the established processes for resolving those challenges as they relate to land use decisions. For this reason, I do not support Senate Bill 30. Although the governor no longer stands beside his original statement, I definitely believe he had it right the first time. To have rushed into this recommendation is unimaginable to me. The implementation...
Ms. Severide, could you wrap up your comments?
Yeah,
please.
Real quick. Okay. The implementation of this type of law, a law that will never be reversed, a law that will set such a precedent in all counties of this state, most of which have professed Oregon treasures, deserves a far more fully vetted process, one that certainly takes longer than 57 days and details scientific studies supporting the assumptions. So I'll go to my closing statement. I am not against protecting the river and the basin, and I absolutely recognize and appreciate the beauty of this area. I am, however, against setting two standards in motion. It is my opinion that by setting two very diverse standards, you are in effect saying, The Metoyer Basin is special. It's just not that special.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I live in Walport, Oregon. I represent Oregon Guides and Packers and the McKinsey River Guides Association. As many of my clients, we grew up on the McKinsey River. And when we were kids, we all would drive over the top of the hill. And I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time on the east slope of the Cascades. The mule deer summer rain, or summer winter range, I believe is a very important part of the habitat for mule deer. And I think it's very important that that habitat be protected. And my association supports House Bill 3100. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Mr. Kanzler, Mr. Kohlberg, Mr. Schreiner, and then on deck we'll have Dennis Chapman, Susan Bragdon, and Brock Howell. Mr. Kanzler?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Eric Kanzler. I am the Executive Director of Central Oregon Land Watch. I'd first like to read some testimony from Paul Dewey, a board member of ours and attorney. He couldn't be here today. Paul wrote, "The last Save the Metolius campaign was 20 years ago in 1989 when the public opposed and stopped, with help from the governor, Forest Service plans to expand campgrounds and recreation facilities in the Metolius. Forest Service ended up recognizing that the carrying capacity of the area had already been reached and set up the Metolius Conservation Area." This postcard, which may or may not have been delivered to you already, but it's in there somewhere, is from that Save the Metolius campaign. For the same reasons now, destination resorts and even an eco-resort creating thousands of new residents are not appropriate and would endanger the Metolius. On behalf of Landwatch, I would like to formally express our strong support for House Bill 3100 to accept the Land Conservation and Development Commission's recommendation to designate the Metolius Area of Critical State Concern with amendments. Landwatch believes that LCDC's management plan, which was unanimously approved, which takes away no development rights, which allows for some future development in the basin, and which received detailed input from numerous stakeholders and the general public, is a very good one. It doesn't have everything that we would have hoped for, but it does establish a protective framework that would ensure that what development does occur in the basin is limited and ecologically sound. DLCD's work in drafting this plan was not the beginning of the state's process to protect the area, but rather the culmination of, at the very least, 2 years' worth of deliberate state involvement that began with Governor Kulongoski's letter to Representative Diane Rosenbaum on June 22nd of 2007. In that letter, the governor expressed not a desire to stay out of the matter, as some have claimed, but to do what was necessary to ensure that the Metolius was protected for generations to come. Closing statement?
Closing statement, thanks.
Quickly. We hope that you will join us in acknowledging this effort, the importance of the Metolius Basin to all Oregonians, and the fact that we must act now and deliberately to ensure that it remains a special place that it is today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kohlberg?
Great. Hi, Chairman Nolan, committee. I'm Keith Kohlberg. I'm president of Son Mundo Incorporated in Multnomah County. We're a management consulting firm active in the renewable energy business. I am here to express my opposition to House Bill 3100. I am very concerned about the impact, the negative impact it will have on the climate for renewable energy and sustainable both entrepreneurs and investors. First thing I would like to state is that you've heard from many people that basically you've got some greedy profit-seeking developers coming in trying to ruin the Metolius for their own self-interests. Would you want to send that message to Vestas saying that we don't really want to be building wind development farms in eastern Oregon? You're a greedy, you know, self-serving corporation. I think the state needs to be very careful about the message it sends to both entrepreneurs and investors in the sustainable rural sector with this bill. I think we need to be very clear about who are the real elite and special interests in this situation. It is not sustainable entrepreneurs trying to build a sustainable community in the Metolius. It's really the local landowners that are politically connected that want to limit access to this area. I would like to personally vouch for the character and the intentions of both Jim Keane and the management team of the Metolian. I've heard about this development for a couple of years. We're both active in business circles, and all I've ever heard them talk about is how excited they are to build a sustainable development that will be nationally feted in this area. They're not talking about how much money they're going to make. Two big concerns I'd like to summarize. One is due process. They followed all the land use rules and got approved by the county, and I think it's inappropriate for the state to come in after the fact and usurp that process. And in addition to that, one of the biggest economic problems that we have in the state is a very difficult investment climate. It's hard for businesses to raise capital to start new businesses. And do we want to send the message again to investors? These are outside investors that Jim Keane has brought in that want to build a sustainable community in Oregon. And do we want to send the message to them that the state will come in if politically connected people don't like what they're doing and usurp their process? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you much. Mr. Schreiner.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Schreiner. I live here in Salem, Oregon. And I want to thank you, first of all, for holding the record open for those of us who did not have a chance to express our opinion last Tuesday. Pretty soon, you will go into a work session. We've heard a lot of good testimony. I'm sure there's a lot of good written testimony that's been submitted. And you're going to be balancing two things when you discuss. You're going to be balancing two sets of values. One are financial values, investments, potential profits for developers. And the other value is protection of a statewide national treasure from negative influences of large-scale developments, private destination resorts. When you make this balance, the weight obviously falls in favor of the latter. So when you vote on this issue, I would like each of you to look into your hearts, think about your children, think about your grandchildren, and vote to bring HB 3100 out of committee, first of all, so all of the representatives of states of Oregon, of the state of Oregon, and senators for that matter, can have their vote on this issue. And second, I would really please ask you to give this a positive recommendation, like the LCDC did, to adopt this measure. So again, I'd like to thank Representative Clem for bringing this important statewide issue to this forum, and I thank you for your time again.
Thanks for being here. Thank you all. I'd like to invite Dennis Chapman, Susan Bragdon, and Brock Howell to the witness table, and our next panel will include Sam Pfeiffer, Ivan Molesky, and Michelle Emmons. Mr. Chapman.
Madam Chair, you did see me here in this seat on Tuesday, but today I'm sitting in for Gregory McLaren, who's the president of Friends of the Metolius, and would like to, and representing the organization today with his testimony. Joshua assures me that you already have the written testimony, but would just like to emphasize 5 points.
Thank you.
If I may. The Friends of the Metolius is an organization that is 475 strong. About 50 of us do not live in Oregon, but of the remainder, about 50% live in central Oregon, and the other 50%, and I'm an example, live in other parts of Oregon. So the Friends of Metolius has a wide, statewide support among its members and supporters. The 5 points, first point, is that we would like to reiterate what others have said, which is that the effort that has been put forth by the Department of Land Conservation and Development and the LCDC is much appreciated. We feel that the product is excellent, and we support the recommendation, the ACSC recommendation. Secondly, as Eric Kanzler just said, in the 80s and again in the 90s, the Forest Service determined that for recreational use, the Metolius Basin was tapped out. And so banning large-scale resorts in the Metolius Basin is the right thing to do. Thirdly, these large-scale developments are being considered at the same time that the Warm Springs Tribes, PGE, are investing $100 million in reintroducing salmon back into the river, and we would not want to have that investment threatened. Fourth, we support the revised map boundaries and the buffers dated in the March 24th plan, as well as the ACSC recommendation. I'm just about done.
Good.
And fifth, we support vigorous protection of Oregon's resource lands and related economic and cultural legacy, including forest and agriculture. So we support House Bill 3100 and the ACSC recommendation, and hope that the legislature will provide this gift to the state of Oregon for this precious gift. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Bragdon.
Chairman Nolan and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Susan Bragdon. I am a lawyer and a policy specialist, and I've worked for the last 20 years, actually over 20 years, in the field of sustainability and sustainable development. I work as a sustainability advisor at both the project level but also at the legal and policy level, and I work all around the world for organizations and clients as disparate as the Oregon Board of Higher Education, the Government of Norway, the Government to Vietnam, the United Nations, the World Bank, the Rockefeller Foundation. So I have a long history in this field, and I'm here because I want to lend my voice to opposing this bill. I think whether we're looking in Oregon or if we're looking internationally, what my experience has taught me is that we're facing similar challenges, and business as usual is just not a viable option to meet these challenges. In Oregon, as elsewhere, we're finding our natural areas and our natural resources are degraded, our rural economies that depend on those natural resource and on that natural resource base are struggling, and federal and state budgets are declining. So clearly the status quo is not an option, and with challenges this large, we need to bring all interested parties to the table to see how our interests can align themselves towards a common goal and to encourage innovative public and private partnerships. What the Metolian model and Jim Keane and Shane Lundgren's development is demonstrating is that there is an approach to ecotourism that not only maintains our natural resource base, it is restorative. Our soil quality increases, biological diversity will increase, rural opportunities will grow, educational opportunities will grow, and communities and economies will be strengthened. If we move in this new direction, I think what's more exciting to me, even more than what would be happening there, is that we would also serve as a model both around the country but also internationally. I worked in Peru to help established about almost 10 years ago now a potato park, which was an agroecological park where people were at the center. But they had nothing like the natural capital fund that is being envisioned under the Metolian project, which would bring in a set sum of predictable funding of about $500,000 a year that could work on restorative projects, community projects. Again, something in a time of declining budgets that I think is really important. When I was asked to look at this project, this is my
Thank
last
you.
Comment, with Shane and Jim, what I really saw was something truly different, a model for a way to move forward in the future. And the person who was talking right before me was saying, oh, if we look to our grandchildren, we should be thinking about that and be
supporting this bill. I would argue quite the opposite. If we care about our grandchildren, we have to find new ways of doing things to see that, in fact, that we aren't having a balance where one thing loses and another thing wins. Because I do believe with models like this, we can have it all, where our economies thrive, our natural resource base is restored, and our communities are strengthened. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you much. Mr. Howell had given me a note that he was double-booked and is testifying on another bill in a different hearing room, so if he returns, we can bring him back up, but we'll go to the next panel now. Sam Pfeiffer, Ivan Malevsky, and Michelle Emmons. Next panel after that will be Peggy Lynch and David Moskowitz. And Mr. Hoyt, if there are others who've signed up, let me know, please. Thank you. Mr. Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Chair Nolan, fellow representatives. My name is Sam Pfeiffer from Multnomah County. I was born in Portland and lived in Oregon all my life. Since my early years here, I've been enjoying and appreciating the scenic beauty and outdoor recreation the state has to offer. I stand before you today to voice my opposition to HB 3100 with a few main points. To begin, with the state population growing and an increased interest in natural resources and beauty, public recreational uses over the Metolius River Basin is and will continue to be increasing regardless of legislation. This bill might be ideal if our growth rate was zero, we were all economically sound and stable, and visits to the area were not increasing, but I think we all know this is nowhere near the truth. As a young Oregonian with a passion for preserving and enjoying our natural resources, I urge you to look forward. The past decades of recreational use in the Metolius Basin have had an impact on the ecosystems and wildlife. It would be irresponsible and naive to disregard this and assume that by creating an ACSC, these problems would disappear. Usage will continue to increase, and funding to remedy this problem is non-existent and not provided for in the ACSC management plan. The Metolian, which would be a small-scale, eco-friendly outdoor recreation destination, has proposed a natural capital fund, which would be designed to fund increased environmental conservation and restoration to the Metolius River Basin. An amount of lodging costs, property owners' fees, and a percentage of each unit sale would be contributed toward this goal. In a time where public funding for restoration and conservation of natural areas is non-existent, I see this as a positive and crucial form of coping with inevitable increased usage. It's an adaptive strategy rather than a short-sighted and ineffective preventative measure. Second, I would like to reiterate some of the comments made in a testimony on Tuesday that I see as absolutely essential and relevant. The proposed legislation that would prevent the development of the Metolian is short-sighted and in direct opposition to the goals of Oregon to become a world leader and example of sustainable development. We have made great strides over the past decade in responsibly adapting to a growing population and a demand for resources, but these efforts have been largely confined to urban areas. I see this as an opportunity to show the rest of the country and the world that we have the ability and the initiative to take special natural and rural areas and develop innovative green ideas that will allow for positive and minimal impact recreational experiences. Closing really quick.
Thank you.
In closing, I think the Metolian is a perfect example of the type of sustainable development which Oregon should be pursuing, and that it leaves the basin and its natural resources in a better condition than they're currently in. Simply stated, I believe in the Oregon land use system and that has served the state very well. I urge you to not adopt something which has been rushed in the minds of many, which can only serve to diminish the public's perception of the certainty and fairness of the land use program. Thank you.
Thank you. Malevsky.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Malevsky. I'm the conservation coordinator for the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 3100. The Sierra Club strongly supports the protection of the Metolius River Basin and its area of influence, as identified in 3100, as an area of critical state concern. We recognize that there are literally just a handful of places in the state that are like the Metolius Basin. You really can count them on one hand. We have hundreds of members who live in Central Oregon, including the communities of Sisters, Camp Sherman, and Black Butte Ranch. In recent years, we've seen a rapid growth of destination resorts, golf courses, and housing developments in Central Oregon. While we can understand the desire for people to move to or recreate in Central Oregon, many of these new developments threaten limited groundwater supplies and important fish and wildlife habitat. When inappropriately sited, these types of developments can also create costly new problems in areas frequented by wildfire. Over the years, the Sierra Club has worked with our membership on a variety of efforts to protect the Metolius River and the forests that surround it. We have supported sensible fuel reduction strategies in and around the community, such as Camp Sherman, Sisters, and Black Butte Ranch, and we have fought inappropriate timber sale proposals for protected old-growth forest reserves on federal lands in the Metolius Basin. We believe now that one of the biggest threats to the unique qualities of the Metolius River will be new groundwater withdrawals to supply extensive new resorts and housing developments proposed by Dutch Pacific Resources and the Ponderosa Land and Cattle Company. These proposed developments, which will result in 630 and 2,500 new housing units and other structures respectively, will not only cause a detrimental impact to limited groundwater and potentially the flows of the Metolius River itself, but also detrimentally impact important wildlife habitat and cause problems for local fire protection districts charged with protecting lives and property when inevitable wildfires return to this area. HB 3100 will protect the unparalleled qualities of the Metolius River Basin once and for all in the face of growing development and pressures and threats. We urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Simmons.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I came here to speak on behalf of the Metolian Project. My name is Michelle Emmons. I do reside in Multnomah County. I have 14 years of outdoor and environmental industry experience and also social advocacy. I come to you today as a citizen who appreciates the stillness of a first snow, the rush and wonder of the horizon from the top of Cascade Volcanic Summit, and the deafening chorus of birdsong in a newly emerging forest in the spring. I would like to address two things today regarding the Metolian that are near and dear to my heart. The Metolian seeks to advance opportunities for more people to connect with nature and build ownership among a variety of audiences to support stewardship in public land spaces. Studies across the globe show that people with less access to nature exhibit relatively poor focus and a lower cognitive function. In fact, a myriad of organizations is now supporting this concept of bringing top-of-mind awareness to a growing population of obesity. In a day and age of video games, television, and computers, cell phones, all with the advantage of a living room sofa, outdoor recreation and connection to nature has become critical for both adults and children, for health, and the future legacy of our environment. Saving a generation is not a spectator sport. The Metolian has demonstrated a commitment to programming its business model with proactive, innovative ideas that invite both public and private partners to the table, including corporate and nonprofit leaders, educators, community planners, and government officials, all to support and promote building outdoor education, recreation, and stewardship throughout the proposed development region. Aside from the educational and recreational aspects of this project, the Metolius has dedicated a portion of its working capital as a sustainable funding mechanism for public land maintenance in the surrounding region. At a time when our government agencies, such as the U.S. Forest Service, are facing daunting budget cuts and cutting down timber is no longer a viable option to support long-term maintenance issues, why would the state of Oregon set aside the opportunity to fund our public land appropriately with a business model with the potential to generate over $500,000 to this end? This is a public-private partnership model that has proven to be an effective and relevant method to address funding in a variety of community forums. The Metolian offers a radical change of thinking in how we develop communities to engage people in sustainable thinking through sound innovation and scientific environmental engineering processes. There is no golf course. A variety of architectural and structural components would also allow for more inclusivity for investors and in the outdoor movement itself. The Metolian is a turnkey solution for building our economic future through ecotourism and a variety of job opportunities, as well as moving destination resort development in a direction to actually be more accountable to Oregon's taxpayers. The integrity of this project fills critical gaps in protecting the future environmental and social legacy in the state of Oregon. I am here today as a citizen of this state for over 30 years, a sustainability and an environmental advocate, and an outdoor professional. I am a skier, a hiker, a climber, a cyclist, a paddler, and a mother who hopes to pass on the passion and a love of nature to my own children. I ask you today for your support in the Metolian Project and protecting its integrity as proposed so that it will benefit and save the Metolius Basin for all of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one clarification, Ms. Emmons. Did I hear you say at the beginning you're speaking here on behalf of the Metolian Project? Are you representing them?
I'm not representing
them.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you all. Peggy Lynch, David Moskowitz, and Scott Beckstead. And then our last panel will be Lewis Pitt, and we'll bring Mr. Howell back.
Thanks. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'd like to start my testimony with Ms. Eamon's first sentence or two. It was beautiful, considering what we all hear around here. The visions that she mentioned about snow and birdsong was wonderful. However, the League has long supported our statewide land use planning system. An element of that program is a process to designate an area of critical state concern. Over the years, this provision has been discussed related to a number of areas, including the Forest Park area of Washington and Multnomah counties, and of course the Metolian Basin, the Metolius Basin. Freudian slip. Under regular circumstances, the League has not supported state intervention of individual local planning decisions so long as the statewide goals, rules, and laws are followed. We have supported processes of the Land Conservation and Development Commission as they use their authority to consider local plans. In this case, we believe that a thorough public process has been followed and a reasonable recommendation has been forwarded to the legislature. Therefore, we support the designation of the Metolius Basin as an area of critical state concern. The particular uniqueness of this area due to linkages with water and wildlife resources lends itself to this special protection. We would have preferred that this work had been done before development interests had been involved, and we encourage that any future nominations for areas for designations be done earlier. However, we do understand that sometimes the designation consideration can occur only after a major threat to a resource area has been acknowledged. So we encourage your passage of House Bill 3100. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Scott Beckstead. I am the Senior Oregon State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. On behalf of our 145,000 members here in Oregon, I'm here to urge you to support House Bill 3100. As the nation's largest animal protection organization, I can tell you that the preservation of the Metolius River Basin is an animal welfare issue. There are literally dozens of wild species that call this area home. Many of those species are sensitive or threatened, and preserving this area is absolutely critical as a means of making sure that our wildlife have a place to live. In particular, we are concerned about the potential impact of this development on the mule deer winter range and elk migration routes. So we are proud to stand along with organizations such as the Oregon Hunters Association and the Sierra Club in urging you to vote yes on House Bill 3100.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is a historic day. The Humane Society and the Oregon Hunters Association stand.
Chair Nolan and Representative Cowan, Al Elkins and I were actually going to synchronize our presentation, but we weren't called up at the same time.
It's a shame.
It is historic.
I'm sorry, I couldn't let that pass.
It's noteworthy.
Madam Chair, I just want to be sure that I understand that you want to preserve them so that the hunters can shoot them. Is that right?
Chair Nolan, Representative Winger, to be clear, I would submit that our motivations may be different, but the objectives are the same.
Thank you.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee.
Moskowitz.
My name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today representing Wildwatch of Oregon. And House Bill 3100 may not be a perfect bill, but the reason this bill has so much support is because Oregon is searching for a way to protect its treasures, and the Metolius is certainly one of those. The Deschutes River Basin is quite unique in terms of the connection between ground and surface water. They're one body, so it's all the same thing. There's a unique mitigation program there. It's actually it's a bucket for bucket. If you take water out of the ground, you've got to find other water from surface sources to put back in. Because of the location of the Metolius, unfortunately, it's not really available to try to mitigate for water use from a large-scale resort or even a small-scale resort. It's the Metolius, just the way it's situated in the Deschutes. It doesn't allow this innovative program to work there, and so that groundwater use will harm the Metolius River. And that groundwater provides, it was one of the, Subtle Lake was one of two sites in Oregon where there were sockeye. The other was Wallowa Lake. A dam blocks that. A dam blocks the sockeye going to Subtle Lake. But we know that there's been a huge investment of federal and tribal and private money to reintroduce salmon and other anadromous fish into the Metolius. The sockeye could once again see, the Subtle Lake could once again see sockeye salmon. The bull trout, listed as threatened across the western United States, have a home in the Metolius. There's many of them. And if any of you ever fished there, if you haven't, you cast a large bunny leech across some of those pools, and you'll see a huge 3-foot-long shape come out of the darkness to try to grab that. And it's a thrilling event, and that's why the Metolius attracts anglers from all over the country to participate in that. We've heard a little bit about mitigation. Mitigation truly doesn't always return what you say it is. This represents the Metolius Basin. Beautiful, incredible place. People want that, and what you get back for mitigation is often this. It's never quite enough. It never replaces the original beauty or the original resources. And if I may have a closing?
Yes.
Thank you. The river comes from within the earth, but it really comes from within each of us, and it renews us, it renews our soul, it renews our hope, and it's in this river basin in the center of Oregon. It's the center of Oregon's heart, and that's why you've seen so much passion here today for this place, and I really appreciate the chance to speak, and thank you for your patience, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Madam Chair, are we taking a question, or...
We haven't been.
Okay.
Are we excused?
It's just a former mayor, and I was going to ask a former mayor a mayor question, but it can wait.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. So, former mayor from the coast. My question is, and I've thought a lot about this myself growing up in the coast, did you feel that the loss of property taxes to the city you represented due to the beach bill and the essentially locking up at the beach by turning it into Highway 1, was that a major loss decades later for you, that the property taxes derived from having a beach bill that did not allow development further out onto the beach, was that a major problem?
Chair Nolan, Representative Clem, if I understand your question correctly, I think the answer would probably be no. When I served as the mayor of Waldport, we tried very much to market and promote the natural attributes of the Alsea Bay, which is the primary natural attribute for Waldport, as a selling point. And we actively marketed and promoted it without necessarily lending it to wide open development, because we understood that there was a long-term objective. And so I think if I understand your question, the answer would probably be no.
Thanks. Okay.
I'm sorry I started that.
Yes, you did.
Well, and it just, I guess it begs the question, how much property was that?
Chair,
the beach bill?
Chair Nolan, Representative Hannah, I don't know.
Do you have any idea how much it was within the city limits?
Of
your city?
Was within the area affected by the beach bill? Well, Waldport sits right there on the beach.
I'm very aware, but yeah. I'm wondering if you know how much property was impacted. So, I mean, your answer was no, but your answer is no because X amount of property was taken out? Or?
Chair Nolan, Representative Hannah, if I understand your question correctly, I was probably about 12 when all that bottle bill stuff happened, so I probably can't speak directly to that, but I can tell you that obviously...
Beach bill.
But I can tell you that, I made it a point as mayor make sure and preserve the natural attributes as much as possible, because I felt that is what had the greatest long-term economic benefit for Waldport.
I think Mr. Beckstead is being used as a ping-pong ball here.
I don't mind.
I don't think we want to continue. Thank you. Let's bring our last panel forward. Thank you. Brock Howell and Louis Pitt.
Thanks once.
Is there anyone else who I have not yet called who I would like to bring David Allen up from Jefferson County later, but is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify before we go to that discussion in the department? Okay, great. Mr. Howell?
Thank you, Chair Nolan and members of the committee. Sorry, I had a leave earlier. I had other testimony at the same time, and so just don't work for me. I'm here, Brock Howell, representing Environment Oregon, and we are a statewide organization with 30,000 members that help to protect clean air, clean water, and open space. We are here in support of HB 3100, and I think there's been a lot of good reasons to protect it that have been given over the past 2 days of testimony. I would like to emphasize the process that we have gotten here and why this is a fair bill to be able to protect the Metolius. The Metolius is really not only a place of statewide significance, but also of nationwide significance. It is designated as a wild and scenic river. And so I think it's clear that there's no question that this is a place of statewide significance, which is important because of how the law is situated, in that both in designating an area of critical state concern and in using the streamlined process for designating destination resorts requires it's a consideration of the statewide significance of both those things. And so I think this is the right process of being able to protect the Metolius. We should be having LCDC coming with a recommendation of a management plan of how to protect it, then this legislature considering that this is a place of statewide significance. And this has not been ill-considered. We started this in 1975 of considering this. It proceeded on for the federal designation of a wild scenic river. And now, 2007, we considered it, and now we're considering it again after a full vetting of departments and state agencies of saying that the current protections are inadequate, and then LCDC coming back with four public hearings and the recommendation. So our process, I believe, is adequate, and the proposed bill and the management plan, we believe, provides a fair result for protecting the Metolius and providing existing and additional development rights to the current landowners. So we thank you for your time, and we urge you to pass HB 3100.
Thank you. Mr. Pitt.
Hello again. Louis Pitt, Jr., Director of Government Affairs and Planning, Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Last time I spoke for the Vice Chair, handing you some documents, and this time I'd like to speak more for myself. And Chair, I think you check your email. You may have some emails coming from our tribal folks. Jolene Estimo back there, I know, sent you a note on that about the Metolius situation. I've been through quite a few on-reservation battles when it comes to trying to protect what I believe is important on a reservation and in our area. We were, of course, blessed with wonderful lands, with precious waters and a mountain that provides very well for us, and tribal members have always known that. In 1973, kind of recent history in Indian time, his conditional use area was laid out by tribal membership and Bureau of Indian Affairs. You know, say something about the good about the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They did a good job of setting aside certain areas, of which one of those was 60,000 acres plus in the Mount Hood Jefferson area, of which the Metolius River and Jefferson Creek are connected to that border of the reservation. So again, when you set aside those areas, it's close to our version of what is conditional use as yours would be for wilderness. And I remember there is a petition that was started. Somebody was talking about a resort on Mount Jefferson. we just barely got out of that one alive. Tribal members mounted a campaign, and over 1,200 people signed a petition that said not no, but hell no, to developing a resort on our precious Mount Jefferson. Wilderness plans adjacent to the area, I've got to work with some of those. What to do with fire, we'll live with fire in that area because it's a natural part of that system. Fire burned over from started in the Forest Service side and burnt some of our areas, and we, again, we know fire can burn both ways, so we have a tenuous agreement with the Forest Service. We know fire is a reality out there. I did an amateurish attempt at what I a low head hydro for a chairman at the time to see how viable it was in the that area, a place called Whitewater, and it is viable, but again, the biggest thing was the social impact and the cultural and sacred impacts to that area. Geothermal is something we're thinking about, keeping for the future. Again, that would be a future choice, not one of ours today. I think culturally and socially, tribal members say, heck no, we would like that area set aside in its conditional use. And lastly, I worked with the Wild and Scenic River Plan, of which we did a number of those around our area, using our treaty rights to help leverage better protection for the rivers and for the whole functioning system. They have quarter-mile boundaries. That was a decent start. That was better than most people laid out at that time, which is anywhere from zero to about 25 feet, I think, is what the state had as standards. And so, again, the many, I think we've been future-oriented in this, and again, as I said last time, kind of an added comment to the chair, vice chair's comments, is that we depend on our neighbors to try to do their best to take care of resources, and we're taking care of ours where we can on the reservation. So those are some of the views of, I think, the sacrifice and the active and passive management, I guess is the word on some of our wilderness areas, but it's a matter of choice. We set those aside to for the future. They produce very well for us as they exist right now in water quality and cleaning the air and beauty and places to go when you want to get away from it all. So thank you, Chair, Committee.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who has testified today and those who testified on Tuesday. I especially appreciate those who came back today because we ran out of time on Tuesday. Colleagues, I'm going to invite David Allen from Jefferson County up to give him an opportunity to address issues that have been raised, give us a little bit of opportunity to question him, and I'm going to allow, because I want to allow a fair amount of time for this, so I'm going to allow 15 to 20 minutes, and then I'm going to ask the department to come up and address some of the issues that have been raised, and he'll, the department director will also be available for questions. If you have a statement, that would be great, or if you'd like to just address your issues, Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. David Allen again on behalf of Jefferson County. I don't have anything more than what I said 2 days ago. I do have written testimony that fleshes out with a little bit more specificity some of the difficulties and problems with the process that was engaged in and then the ultimate product of the plan. So I think maybe the best use of the time would be to answer any questions the committee may have. I'm more than willing to share my time with Director Whitman if he wants to come up. I don't want to take his arrows, and I promise I won't take any of his, or he can't take any of mine, but I'm more than happy to have him come up at the same time as the committee would like.
Are there questions for Mr. Allen? Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, because we had a brief time with you, we saw some of the maps. The department had some technical difficulties with the maps. We didn't get all the mapping issues resolved. It feels like there's a difference of opinion between what the department is presenting in terms of mapping and what the county has presented in terms of mapping, both on wildlife range, and I mean, obviously they have some clerical errors within their map. They somebody's confused about where the where Lake Billy Chinook is, and I had pointed that out the other day. But there's a few other things. Can you clarify some of those issues for us?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, thank you for that question. I will attempt to. We have been provided very few maps until at the very end. Certainly as the management plan, and I was going through my file here earlier today, I think there were four or five drafts of the plan and that boundary continued to change as the plan continued to go through. The maps that we saw for the first time were provided on March 11th in a PowerPoint presentation, and were ostensibly purported to be U.S. Forest Service maps related to deer and elk habitat. And it was at that point we began to realize that we had been apparently talking apples and oranges all along. When Jefferson County adopted its Goal 5 acknowledged inventory of habitat, it was winter range for deer and elk. It was where the animals have nowhere else to go. That's where they come in the winter. And we have not protected, not been required by the state to protect any kind of summer range or transitional range. So for the first time, we were provided a map by the Forest Service that had these new ranges apparently depicted on them. We went back and did our due diligence, took those maps, and did an overlay. And Jeff Rasmussen from the county is here as well. He's actually been kind of my Google expert. If you'd like for him to come up, he might have some
Mr.
more
Rasmussen,
detail.
Mr. Rasmussen, it's fine.
But certainly the maps were inconsistent.
In the handout the county gave was the larger 11x17
maps. Please identify yourself.
Jeff Rasmussen, Jefferson County Administrative Officer. And so we attempted to, I don't know if you all brought your stuff down, but we attempted to take that Forest Service map that had the Lake Billy Chinook in the middle and overlay what our Goal 5 shows. And it really does show that the county's Goal 5 inventory meets, if you take this as the most current U.S. Forest Service data, following section lines, which you normally do. Fairly close. There's just a slight little bit of overlay. And what we were really disappointed about at the March 11th hearing is the Forest Service map was produced and shown, but didn't even take the time to put the destination resort overlay on it. And so for a committee and the citizens to see general pointing in the area and talking about deer winter range, I would point out on that map that the two destination resorts, if you took the Forest Service, 99.5% of the deer winter range would still be protected with the two destination resort maps going forward. And 100% of the elk winter range would still be protected with the two destination resort maps going forward.
Any other questions? Representative Hanna, are you done? Anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Cowan.
Thank you. In some conversations that you had with me, you had brought up some discrepancies, and I believe we saw it in today's testimony that I probably can't find quickly enough that related to the status of the wildlife in the area. Could you speak to that in terms of the health of the populations?
Certainly. In the draft management plan, there is a finding related to the populations of the wildlife. And I apologize, I think it's on page 29, excuse me. And it paints a very dire picture of the current status of that population. It says in 2006, ODFW wrote regarding a deer population that was 40% below its population objectives. We were struck by that, particularly when we printed out a 2008 hunter alert, and I won't get in the middle of the Humane Society Hunters Association battle there, but the hunter alert made a report from the same agency, from ODFW, that said, oh, the hunt ought to be great this year because we're at population objectives in this unit. And so we're struck with this conflict between either there's a conflict or miraculously in 2 years that deer population increased by a factor of 40%. So these are the kinds of things that without the data or the support for the facts that are in this draft management plan, the county's had an almost impossible time rebutting, refuting, or even, quite frankly, having a conversation because the data is just not there. Sweeping statements are made. For instance, I think I made a comment earlier, the three sources that the agency used apparently were the Metolius Watershed Analysis, the Deschutes National Forest Plan, and the Wild and Scenic River Management Plan. I searched through all three of those documents for the word golf course. It's not in there. So where does the conclusion that somehow a golf course is going to be completely deleterious to the headwaters of the Metolius come from? It doesn't come from any of those three reports, and there's no citing to any other authority for that. So there's not the clear A plus B equals C that we ordinarily are required to do in our land use process, which is cite specifically to the substantial evidence that's in the record that would allow us to make findings such as this draft management plan does. And thank you for that question, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, David. And I've heard that you're an excellent land use attorney and that you push back regardless of who the client is if you think that the law. So my question is, I know that there's been discussion about a potential suit against the state, and I'm just interested in, I'm not a lawyer, mm-hmm. but the way that I read the statute, the LCDC has discretion, and they didn't do it, thank goodness, but they have discretion to hold commission hearings and then just vote. There is no formal consultative role required at all, as far as I can read it in the ACSC statute. I think, you know, I've talked with some of your commissioners about changing the statute in the future mm-hmm. to try and shore it up or have a more formal role, but do you feel like it violated the statute to not have all these things, or is it that at some point we need to figure out how to have a more consultative amendments into that statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Klim, thank you for that question. I appreciate the opportunity to address that issue. I am a lawyer, and you can hold that against me.
We don't.
My training tells me that the legislature is very specific when they draft the law. And if they intend to grant themselves an exemption, they say it. And so I'm having a difficult time, and we have filed just today a petition for judicial review, a copy of which is attached to my written testimony, as is our letter requesting a stay of this recommendation from the agency, which was directed, ironically, to the agency. The standards and criteria are very clear in ORS 197-180, and it says quite simply that all land use planning activities will be subject to the statewide planning goals, the regulations, and the statutes, unless specifically exempted. So I don't think it's so much what the ACSC statute in 405 says is what it doesn't say. It does not say, and you are exempted from this process. You are exempted from goal compliance. You are exempted from rulemaking process. It doesn't say anything of the like. Similarly, if you look at ORS 107.040, it's the section that talks about the duties of LCDC and its rules. And it says that they are to direct their performance in accordance with the provisions of ORS Chapter 183, which is the Administrative Procedures Act, which has very strict requirements regarding notice, opportunities for hearing, requirements that go through a rulemaking process or a contested case or an order other than a contested case. And that all of the duties necessary to carry out ORS Chapters 195, 196, and 197, of which the ACSC is part, shall, and it goes through, be subject to the statewide planning goals. Specifically, subsection 2 says, pursuant to ORS chapters 195, 196, and 197. Those are, again, the statewide land use planning regulations and goals. It specifically references sub G, review and recommend to the Legislative Assembly the designation of areas of critical state concern. So I'm having a very difficult time reconciling, and I would point out, quite frankly, that the county does not take lightly going to the Court of Appeals. We're drugged there routinely on our land use process because, for instance, we blew up a map of Camp Sherman at a scale of 1 inch equals a mile instead of 1 inch equals 10 miles, and that's apparently an issue that the Court of Appeals needs to tangle with. That's the kind of thing we get drugged to the Court of Appeals on a regular basis. That's the process, and we're fine with that. But we don't take lightly going to the Court of Appeals. Do we believe that this process was fundamentally flawed? In other words, I will interpret your question as, was this somehow a technicality? And the simple fact is no. And I've been saying this on behalf of the county throughout this process. Can everyone just slow down? Everyone's in such a hurry because the governor wrote a letter and said this has to be done by mid-March. You know, if you talk to counsel for LCDC, his first analysis was, I need 59 days minimum to pass a rule. I've got 45. I can't make this a rulemaking process because the governor hasn't given me enough time. That's the problem here is that, and it's unfortunately, I know the emotions are high, and we've attempted to be respectful and professional, and quite frankly, so is DLCD staff. We get along with those individuals very well. Director Whitman has worked hard, as have the local staff. there was not sufficient time to go through what those rules are there for a reason, not for some kind of gotcha, you broke it, now I'm going to take you to the Court of Appeals. It's there to ensure that the process is valid. I guess to answer your last question, Representative, if you are of the opinion that this process needs to be improved through further rulemaking or amending the statute, my suggestion would be you do that first before you lock up 22% of Jefferson County.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up? Yes.
Thank you, David. Actually, my question was exactly as I meant it, which was, did you think it was unlawful, not flawed? And my question was, is it your opinion the statute's flawed? It's certainly not my opinion that the statute is flawed. But having said that, I do appreciate the answer, because it is a tough decision here to try and decide legality questions of existing statute. And I think it's appropriate for the courts to make that decision. It's not going to affect my decision. That's a legal decision for the courts to make. But I just want to thank you for explaining it, because I know that the commissioners had voted for that. I know it's going to be in the newspapers, and it's something that, for me, I need to just sort of understand where you're coming from, and you've done a good job. I'm sure the department will also have opinions on this, but thank you for the answer.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did LCDC tell you that they were exempt from the goals?
They did. During their hearing on, I get my dates mixed up, I believe the 24th, or was it the 13th? Friday the 13th, how could I forget? There's an April Fool's Day date in here and a Friday the 13th date in here. The Friday the 13th meeting, we had raised those objections at their hearing on the 11th, and LCDC staff said that they were not subject to the goals and to the rules, that this was not a contested case, this was not a rulemaking procedure, this was a, I think the exact words they used were, this is a legislative concept. Immediately upon that, they went to conduct what would ordinarily be a full-blown regular public hearing with, at that point it was deliberations, but that was their statement on the record of that March 13th meeting, yes.
Thank you.
Follow up. Yes, Representative.
On a slightly different subject. So the water maps came out, and I'm wondering, since you've had very little time to look at them, how you feel about them and what the county's reaction is to these. I know you have some concerns. I'd like them on the record.
We have several concerns about the water maps, and I think we've detailed sufficiently the timing and the access to the data and our struggles with actually being allowed to review the science that was behind it. The two main concerns regarding the map are, for the first time apparently, a hydrogeologist has scientifically proven there is a bucket-for-bucket correlation between groundwater usage and the in-stream flows of any river, let alone the headwaters of the Metolius. That was news to many of the hydrologists that are here on behalf of the Metolian and Ponderosa. Using the same modeling, the same data, they've attempted to run these numbers and can't come up with the same numbers. So that's been a concern for the county, is how did these numbers come to be? Secondly, the current Deschutes Basin Mitigation Program has a trigger in it of 50%. Once you hit the 50% level, you're required to mitigate in that particular area. If you don't, you can mitigate anywhere within the basin. So it's been widely established that 50% is the trigger. We've yet to be convinced or told, quite frankly, why 30% is now the new trigger for analysis on whether or not areas deserve protection, because by Oregon Water Resources Division's own existing mitigation plan, that trigger is 50%, not 30%. So we have significant concerns about the validity of the map and not only the effect that it has on this planning process, but also the potential impact it will have on the existing Deschutes Basin Mitigation Bank.
One last follow-up on
that. Sure, Representative.
Just as a land use attorney, having far more experience on this than I am, I want to stay on that point for a second. If this 30% standard is implemented here, is there any reason to assume that that is a standard that could begin to travel throughout our land use process?
Chair Noel, Representative.
Not just in your county.
And that is the Deschutes Basin covers, I'm going to as you guys probably figured out, Jeff does the maps, I do the law, so he could tell me how many counties are in the basin here. But certainly it encompasses Deschutes and Jefferson counties, and that's for certain. We're concerned that the mitigation bank, and I know Director Whitman's intimately familiar with this, and he may be able to provide you more detail. We're concerned that 30% does establish a new, potentially new, level by which the mitigation will be required to occur in a particular area. And that makes things extremely difficult in the Metolius Basin, because if you're familiar with the mitigation bank, what happens is people get mitigation credits. They line their irrigation ditch and they basically save water. Those credits are then transferable and saleable. If you're required to mitigate in the same basin that you're using, there are no mitigation credits available in the Metolius Basin. There aren't irrigation districts. There aren't ordinary mitigation activities that are going on short of somebody just flat out selling a water right. So we're concerned that that standard, if it does permeate through this mitigation bank, will make certain areas of the basin, basically it'll be a moratorium on development because there will be no way to get water. And we're concerned that the existing plan will be impacted by this new trigger. To answer your question, yes.
I didn't really want to follow up, but I didn't quite get my answer.
That's okay.
I'm talking about whether or not you believe a standard like this could travel outside of even Central Oregon. Whether or not that allowing a standard like this to be set means that we could begin to see it, you know, in Astoria, you know, anywhere.
Right. Chair Nolan, Representative Wingard, again, thank you for that question. I know that the Deschutes Basin Mitigation Bank in and of itself has been a hot topic around the state. It was up for review, its five-year plan or review was last year or the year before that, I think. It's been wildly successful, and there is concern or hope, depending on which side of that issue you're on, that that plan will be used as a model for water resources around the state and its impacts potentially on existing rivers, other rivers, the Willamette, the Columbia, some of the tributaries that feed to the coast. So if the plan works, that would be a great model. So to the extent that this 30% becomes a new standard and that would then theoretically be transmitted across the state, absolutely we'd be concerned about that, because there are just certain areas you can't get the mitigation credits, and that's the whole point. Is in a strange way, the areas that have those mitigation credits are very often agricultural lands that you don't want development going on in those areas, because they're protected under different goals, forest, farm, things of that nature.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. One more question,
yeah.
And then
it's actually not even a question, it's just a statement. I wanted to establish the legislative record that the author of the bill only believes that the 30% threshold should apply to potential areas of critical concern boundaries and not mitigation models around the state.
Okay, good point. Mr. Allen, I hope you'll be able to stick around for the conversation we have. And colleagues, I deliberately am not setting up a debate. I would like the committee to have access to both of these experts, but I don't want to set up a debate between the two of them.
I appreciate that. Director Whitman's former Assistant Attorney General. I don't like my chances.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I also will stay in touch with the representatives of Jefferson County on the scheduling of a work session so that they can participate in that as well.
Thank you, Chair. Members.
Thank you very much. Mr. Whitman.
We have technology today, Madam Chair.
It's a wonderful thing.
It is, sometimes. Madam Chair, for the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I appreciate the remarks from Mr. Allen. We have worked very closely with the county on this process, and I have the utmost respect both for Mr. Allen, Mr. Rasmussen, the county administrator, and the three county commissioners. Before we embarked on this effort publicly, I went over to Madras and sat down personally with each of the county commissioners and talked to them about the process that we were about to embark on. I wanted to sit down with them face to face and tell them what we were about to embark on and have an opportunity to sit down and have that conversation before we got into this process. I administer an agency that is responsible for a statewide land use program. It is not a state land use program. It is a statewide land use program that relies integrally on local governments to implement that program as partners with the state agency. That is of the utmost importance to me. I spent much time during my first year out on the road in communities around the state of Oregon, meeting with people face-to-face and talking with them about what the land use issues are that they're facing so that I made sure I had that personal understanding. And it's with that spirit that the agency approached this process with Jefferson County on the proposed Metolius area of critical concern. We have tried very hard to work with the county, and we continue to be absolutely committed to working with Jefferson County. Jefferson County, unlike many of its sister counties in Central Oregon, has not benefited from destination resort development. We're keenly aware of that. We're keenly aware also of the fact that Jefferson County has one of the highest unemployment rates in the state of Oregon right now. We're keenly aware of the fiscal situation of Jefferson County and the responsibility of the Jefferson County commissioners to look out for that fiscal health of the county and to have revenue sources to pay for key county services. We very much want to work with the county to find an appropriate location for a destination resort in Jefferson County and remain committed to doing that. The county went through a destination resort mapping process under existing law and in good faith. That map that was adopted by the county has been appealed. It's been appealed to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, which found that the county's mapping of destination resorts did violate Goal 5, the goal for protection of open spaces and natural resources in some respects. It's currently on appeal pending in the Oregon Supreme Court. The department was not involved in that appeal, at least initially. We were recently asked by the Oregon Supreme Court to weigh in with a friend of the court brief on the meaning of Goal 5, which we did. When the Oregon Supreme Court taps an agency on the shoulder and says, please tell us what your rule means, you usually do that. So we did. So that case is still pending. And at this point, the status is that the definitive decision so far is the decision of the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals that the map does violate Goal 5. So with all that in mind, there are provisions in the Metolius Area of Critical Concern plan that's been presented to the Oregon legislature that provide some aspects that are specifically designed to recognize the situation of the county. First of all, under existing law for destination resort siting, there is a 30-month prohibition on remapping a county for destination resorts once a county goes through that process. Frankly, it's not clear exactly how that 30-month prohibition applies in this situation where you've got something on appeal. So we put provisions in the plan that make it absolutely clear that Jefferson County is free whenever it wishes to do so, to start a process to identify another site or other sites for a destination resort. And as I mentioned, we're absolutely committed to working with the county on that process with the resources that we have. The Area of Critical Concern Management Plan also has provisions in it, which I didn't have an opportunity to really talk about on Tuesday, that authorize specifically small-scale recreation-oriented development in two locations corresponding to the two areas that were mapped for resort siting. One of those locations is within property owned by the Ponderosa Company and would allow up to 100 residential units and 20 overnight accommodations in what the property owners anticipate to be a recreation equestrian-oriented development. We work closely with the property owners on that process to make sure that the description of the development authorization was something that worked for them. financially, practically. We did the same thing with the owners of the Matolian property in developing a plan to allow up to 25 residential lots on that property and up to 10 overnight units there, as well as a small lodge restaurant facility in each location. So we've worked hard to find an appropriate level of development on these two properties that is consistent with what we are being told is the carrying capacity of these properties in terms of wildlife impacts, water impacts, and impacts on recreation use in the basin. The area of critical concern process, I want to talk a little bit about the philosophy for that. I think in an ideal world, this would be used in a proactive manner to identify that handful of sites in the state of Oregon that there's broad consensus on are really special places that, that should have some level of protection. For whatever reason, that hasn't happened over the last 30 years. We now are faced with the situation in the Matolius, one of the original areas identified as perhaps being appropriate for this, where we have a level of development that's proposed in the basin. We have a land use application ready to go for the Matolian, and we have a water right application for Ponderosa that is pending with Water Resources Department that together would authorize over 3,000 units, residential units, within the basin, far surpassing the current population of the basin and rivaling the population of the city of Sisters. In terms of water use, the water use that's proposed for the Ponderosa development dwarfs not only existing development in the basin, but would dwarf the city of Sisters' use of water in the basin. So we have some specific pending proposals that pose real threats to resources in the basin. That's why we've gone ahead in the time frame that we have. I want to respond to a couple of questions that Mr. Allen brought up primarily on Tuesday, and then I'll get into some of the points that came up today. First of all, the allegation, or the I don't want to call it an allegation, the statement that the state hasn't followed its own rules, nor the county's land use regulations in this process. Well, it's a novel theory. As I think you're all aware, the department proposes a budget to the legislature. The department proposes routinely legislative proposals to this body, and the same reasoning that's being used here for the area of critical concern would apply to any proposal that the agency would make to this legislative body. I think it's pretty clear that a recommendation proposed from the agency is not a final action of the agency with an effect on the ground that is subject to these land use statutes, goals, or rules. That said, the work that we've done on this area of critical concern is absolutely consistent with Goal 1, which relates to citizen participation, and absolutely consistent with Goal 2, which relates to an adequate factual basis in coordination with local government. I provided you information on Tuesday in terms of the citizen participation that has been a part of this process. It's been remarkable. It's been analogized to the same level of participation that was provided by the county in its destination resort mapping. The fact that we were able to do that in a short period of time, I think, is remarkable. In terms of adequate factual base and coordination, again, you can see the number of meetings that we've had with the county. We have tried to adapt our plan to meet the county's concerns to the best extent that we could, which is what's required under Goal 2. And in terms of adequate factual basis, I'm going to get into a little bit later in terms of the scientific basis underlying the management plan. So all that goes to say, I don't have any. Even if we were subject to Goal 1 and Goal 2, I think absolutely this has been consistent with those goals.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about the water provisions here, and in order to do that, I need to bring up the map that we handed out. Okay. So this map shows the proposed area of critical state concern. The area that's shown in blue is what's called Area 1. The area that's shown in green is what's called Area 2. Area 1 is the surface basin, drainage basin of the Metolius, with a few exceptions that I'm going to talk about. And the area that's in green is what's known as the water wildlife buffer. And I want to talk about the rationale behind those boundaries a little bit. First of all, with regard to Area 1, there were a couple of exceptions. There were two specific areas that were pulled out of that boundary. One, in the north east corner along Lake Billy Chinook, at the request, strong urging of the county and residents of the area, the commission decided to take out the Three Rivers unincorporated community, which is right along Lake Billy Chinook there. That's a existing development covered by existing unincorporated community provisions for Jefferson County. And it was the judgment of the commission that that's the portion of the basin where there is the least threat to water resources. It's already at the very downstream end of the basin. And in terms of wildlife resources, it's already developed with residential use. So, again, in terms of resources, it just didn't rise to the same level. And then the second area... actually, the next adjustment is actually for Area 2, excuse me. So let me talk then about Area 2. Area 2, the boundary at the very southern end of Area 2 was changed a bit to simply be a straight east-west line. The reason that that was done is that the lands to the south there are all in federal ownership and are either part of the National Forest or wilderness system. So it was judged by the commission that there's essentially really no threat of large-scale development in that area. The rest of the boundary, so why Area 2? Why not just protect the basin itself? There are two fundamental reasons for that: water and wildlife. And let me talk about the water piece first. The current, we work quite closely with Water Resources Department on this plan. The current consumptive use of water in the Metolius Basin is just over 100 acre feet of water per year. It's a very small amount of water use in that portion of the Deschutes Basin. We ran the numbers with Water Resources Department to identify that use. As Mr. Allen just spoke to, that creates an issue under the Deschutes Mitigation Program. The Deschutes Mitigation Program allows additional use of water, but only if you can mitigate bucket for bucket. So because existing use of water within the Metolius Basin is so limited, there are very limited opportunities for mitigation there. And so any new use of land that requires a new groundwater right in the Metolius Basin is going to have a tough time. And the water use provisions of the management plan reflect that. They put a cap on new uses within that Area 1 of 5 acre feet per average annual consumption per year. That translates into about 10 dwellings or more in terms of development size. That was calculated to reflect, if you will, the carrying capacity in terms of what additional development could reasonably occur within the Metolius and still be able to be mitigated under the Deschutes mitigation rules. So there was a direct link between the design of the management plan and the Deschutes Basin mitigation rules. For the area outside, you've seen the... I'll go to it quickly. The water map.
And it's not just a water map. This is a water map that is generated based on years of research by the U.S. Geological Survey on groundwater conditions in Central Oregon that the legislature helped fund, along with the federal government, to develop a model for predicting impacts of groundwater use within the Deschutes Basin. This model is the entire foundation, scientific foundation of the Deschutes mitigation rules themselves. This was the model that basically allowed Water Resources to go forward and design a program to allow additional groundwater use within Central Oregon with mitigation provided. This provided the technical basis for that. So you'll see that there are areas outside of the surface portion of the Metolius, which is the shaded portion there, where you nevertheless still have pretty significant effects on surface water flow within the Metolius. So let me explain those numbers. You see, for instance, just south of Black Butte itself, the label 52%. What that means is if a new well was put in that location and pumped water at a steady rate, 52% of that water that was withdrawn from that well would show up in reduced flow in the Metolius River itself, in the wild and scenic portion of the Metolius River. That's what that number means. So, and then correspondingly going to the east, 30%, and then to the north, 24%. So if that number is over 50%, then mitigation is required by Water Resources rules. It's covered by existing regulations. But if you drop below 50% under the current rules of the Water Resources Commission, mitigation is not required. They only require mitigation in the portion of the basin where that number is over 50%. So there is a, if you will, I don't really want to call it a disconnect, but there's a, in the design of the mitigation program, there's the potential for some impacts on sub-basins within the Deschutes Basin that are not fully mitigated. Part of the design here of the Area of Critical Concern Management Plan is to fit together with the Water Resources Deschutes Mitigation Program to cover that by essentially limiting land uses that would result in significant uses of water where those percentages would still be quite high but below 50%. That's why you heard the 30% number used. We did draw the boundary for the southern... Now I need to go back.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greenwood.
Can I ask a question, please?
If it's about the map, but otherwise I'd like to hear the testimony and then we'll open it up for questions.
All I wanted to ask is the 52% number, is that only about wells or would that be capturing other groundwater?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, that's only groundwater use.
My question is, the Metolian has a proposal for capturing groundwater that might otherwise go into the ground. Would that follow the same kind of rules that the taking it out of the aquifer?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, no. It would fall under other rules of the Water Resources Commission dealing with whether there's water, surface water, available for appropriation.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Clarification.
So, the southern portion of the boundary of Area 2 was drawn based on that 30% impact level. So everything captured within the southern portion of that area is between 50 and 30% impact on the Metolius for groundwater use. As you go north in Area 2, that percentage starts to fall below 30%. And the main reason for including that area within the Area 2 is not... it's water is still a concern, but the primary reason is really protection of wildlife and the Metolius deer, elk, and elk herds. So that's just a little bit of discussion about the scientific basis, if you will, for the water provisions in the area of critical state concern, and a little bit of explanation for
some of the questions that Mr. Allen raised about where do the numbers come from, and he also had a question about how do they get administered. So Water Resources has numbers that they regularly use in evaluating water right applications for consumptive use that are widely available. There are also third-party sources of consumptive use. We could have put in a matrix in this, but frankly, we wanted to leave the county with some discretion in terms of administration of the plan to administer this in a common sense way. Okay. The next question I want to address is with regard to some standards in the management plan that require that there be no negative impact. And this is in Section 2 of the management plan. Those standards apply to major amendments of the management plan. They don't apply to, and I want this to be on the record and very clear, they do not apply to the development that's authorized for the Matolian property, nor do they apply to the development that's authorized for the Ponderosa property, nor do they apply to any other development that's authorized currently under the plan, which would include most uses of land within the basin. This plan only kicks in when you go above 10 units, 10 new residential units. And since most of this area is planned and zoned for forest use, that's not going to affect most people. So the Section 2 no negative impact standards apply only to major amendments of the management plan by the commission. There are a limit on the commission's discretion to undertake major changes in the plan and would require that the commission come back before the legislature if it's making major amendments that would result that could not meet that standard. So it's a fairly narrow application of that standard.
During the commentary, I'll allow clarifying questions, but let's hold, you know, broader questions for later.
Well,
Representative Esquivel.
Does that mean that there would not be any more building on the Metolius itself in the form of housing since you're over, what do you say, 10 units?
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, it would mean any one owner couldn't build more than 10 units, but there's no overall cap on additional development. If you actually, if I go back to show you this map, the areas in green are in public ownership. The areas in white are in private ownership. There's very little private ownership along the Metolius River at this point. And what there is zoned for forest use, which requires that you have 180 acres of land before you can put a dwelling on the land. So there's very little potential outside of large-scale resorts for a lot of development to occur in this area.
Clarifying question?
Yeah, on that issue, right? I had written down the question. Thank you. You know, my question was, how much private property is in the area other than the two resort pieces that have been discussed and the property owned by DPR that would be private property available for a private house? And on top of that, I think we heard testimony there's 104 of the
recreational
permits. And does that include the sort of mini resort that's there? Are they there on part of a recreational permit, or are they there on private property?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, I think you may be referring to the Metolius Meadow subdivision, which is on private property. It's, I believe, about 100 units approved by Jefferson County back in the 70s. And then there are about 100, and I don't have these numbers exactly, Jefferson County will have better numbers, about 100 recreational cabins that are under lease from the U.S. Forest Service. And there are a few other developments. There's Lake Creek Lodge, and I think there are a couple of other similar developments right along in the Camp Sherman area.
Like Lake Creek Lodge, is that a Forest Service permit holder? Something like Diamond Lake Lodge is a resort operator on a Forest Service permit or private property?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, I'm going to have to defer on that question. We can look into it and get you an answer, or Jefferson County may know off the top of their heads. I can't remember.
I'm seeing some nods in the audience from
Mr.
folks.
Mr. Rasmussen?
Private.
Private. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Whitman?
Yes. So the next thing I wanted to cover, just a minor matter, a point that there was no legal description, is I've described the LCDC made a couple of changes to the boundary to make sure that the boundary followed either section lines or quarter section lines so that the legal boundaries of this area can be exactly identified and easily administered. So I think the commission has taken care of that issue. The point was also made on Tuesday that the county also developed a plan to protect the Metolius, and I do want to speak just briefly about that. The county did develop a plan during this process also to protect the Metolius. The county's plan would provide some limits within 3 miles of the Metolius River itself. And I went out to the county and met with the county about their and talked with them about their plan. Their plan really is directed at different issues than the area of critical state concern management plan. It's directed at water quality and directed at uses on Forest Service lands and other lands in close proximity to the Metolius River. Just very briefly on those points, the Metolius itself is also protected as both a federal wild and scenic river and a state scenic river. So there are protections in place for both federal lands and state lands as a result of those management plans. There has been a lot of criticism of the Forest Service on the Forest Service lease properties over septic systems on the 100 or so recreational cabins that we just talked about. It is my understanding that most of those septic systems have been modernized and moved away from the river. There is a small percentage that still have not, but the Forest Service, it's my understanding, has addressed those issues. I asked the county about that, whether they felt there was still a significant problem, and the indication I got was, no disagreement that the Forest Service had addressed most of the problem. So, if the county had been able to identify specific major threats to the Metolius that were not controlled by existing regulations, that's why I went out there to listen to the county and understand whether there were other things. I don't believe there are. In terms of, finally, the science supporting the area of critical concern, the first draft of the management plan done by DLCD before we got into hearings identified a number of Forest Service documents that we were relying on in our work on the area of critical state concern, and specifically identified the 2004 watershed update that Mr. Allen has referred to. That is one of the key documents. Also specifically referred to the Wild and Scenic Management Plan and the Deschutes National Forest Land and Resources Management Plan. The other documents that are part of the Commission's record and were considered as part of this are documents that have been submitted by the co-managers in the administration management of this area, specifically the U.S. Forest Service, the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation, and then also Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Those agencies have submitted comment letters in part with regard to the 2006 destination resort mapping undertaken by the county. Again, with regard to the water right application that I referenced that has been made by the Ponderosa development. And again, most recently, testimony submitted by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, very specifically identifying problems with the county's wildlife analysis on remand of the LUBA decision on the mapping, holding that the county's mapping violated Goal 5 that the county now has on hold pending the Supreme Court decision. That's a December 28, 2008 letter from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that's referenced in, I believe, in the final management plan. So all of those documents from the co-managers were important and considered as part of the recommendations on the management plan. Again, the main points are the basin's at carrying capacity, the deer herd population is declining, and by the way, Mr. Allen just mentioned the more recent information on the deer herd size. Well, the December 2008 letter, I believe, also references a 40% decline in the population of the Metolius deer herd. So I'm not sure. We'd have to get ODFW in here, I think, to reconcile any confusion between the numbers. But our understanding is that it's now about 40% below population levels. Okay, just very briefly on the last points that came up. I know I've taken a long time, and I appreciate your patience. I think I've responded to most of the points. The last point I'd maybe respond to is Representative Wingard's questions on the traveling of the 30% standard. Mm-hmm. I think I've adequately explained the reason for that and the fact that this is really sort of an unusual situation. The Deschutes mitigation rules don't exist elsewhere in the state. They've only been used in Central Oregon as a way of allowing that region to continue to grow and continue to develop new uses of water. Water Resources is just completed a five-year review of its program. This issue of mitigation in sub-basins, if you will, that aren't protected by the 50% threshold was a major issue in the five-year review of the program, and we have been working closely with Water Resources to try to coordinate with them and develop a multi-agency, really, response on this that substantively responds to those issues. So I think that's part of the plan that you have coming from LCDC on this. I don't see this being applied in other areas of the state. Again, it's very fact-specific to the specifics of groundwater use and the potential amount of groundwater use in the Metolius Basin. So with that, I think I'll stop, and if you have questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. And I particularly want to thank both Mr. Whitman and Mr. Allen for giving us a kind of dispassionate information, walking us through this, and the kind of conversation we've had has been very helpful for me. Are there questions for Mr. Whitman? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whitman, you mentioned a 40% decline in the mule deer population in the specific area, but I'll be honest with you, I'm seeing a heck of a decline in mule deer population in all of eastern Oregon as well as Rocky Mountain elk, and it's very disturbing. I would be curious if we could find out what the rest of the eastern Oregon area is. And give you an example, when I first started hunting in the North Yonday Wilderness, I'd see 300 head of elk a year. Now you're lucky to see 50. So that's telling me something.
We'd be happy to get that information, Representative.
Come my backyard and hunt. Representative Hannah?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. Mr. Whitman, and I appreciate the position you're in here, and it's a tough one. I think we heard testimony from the county that the area of concern eliminates 22%. Is that, I think that was the number that we heard. And you talked about trying to mitigate. I mean, we're talking about water mitigation. We're talking about, you know, wetlands mitigation. There's lots of mitigation that happens in land use planning. And you mentioned trying to help the Ponderosa and trying to help the Metolian folks. How do you replace 22% of the county's property, I mean, in effect,
They can't do much in that area. I mean, and so what's the goal for replacement of their potential there? That's the first half. And the second half, and I was glad to hear you mention that you would help them in terms using your resources on remapping. And I wondered if that meant the state was going to pay for remapping or just say to the county, you need to remap because your map isn't right anymore.
Thank you, Representative Hanna, Chair Nolan, Representative Hanna. Let me deal with the second question first. The department is appropriated money by this body to provide grant funds to local governments to carry out land use planning responsibilities. It's not an enormous program, and I don't know what resources we'll have in the next biennium. But assuming that we have resources, we have, I think, verbally indicated to the county that we would seriously entertain an application from the county for assistance in doing remapping work within Jefferson County, recognizing the fact that they went through a mapping process and have, you know, we are where we are now.
Yeah.
On your second question, in terms of elimination of 22% of the county, again, you need to look at the maps and see what proportion of the county are private lands, what proportion are federal lands, what proportion are tribal lands. And the county, I think, would be the first to tell you that a significant portion of the county is federal and tribal, and that creates issues for the county in terms of its fiscal health.
Mm-hmm.
So while it may be true that this area represents 22% of the land area of the county, I don't think it represents close to that in terms of percentage of private land.
Okay.
And in the private land that it does include, again, most of it, almost all of it, with the exception of a couple of rural unincorporated communities, Camp Sherman and Blue Lake, are planned and zoned for forest land, and it allows very little in the way of private development. So there are other forest lands in the county. There are other agricultural lands in the county I didn't talk about this, but the agency actually worked hard to try to identify an alternative location for a resort as part of this process, and we got in a certain amount of trouble for trying to do
farmers.
That. But I think that's indicative of how seriously we take the situation of the county here. We really were struggling to try to help them locate an appropriate place for a resort, and we continue to want to work with the county in that manner.
Representative Clem?
Thank you. Richard, I just want to get clarification. The term has been used a couple times, elimination from Jefferson County. Is there anything about the area of critical concern that removes this property from Jefferson County's boundaries, or is it a defined area that then there's a management plan that covers that area?
Chair Nolan, Representative Clem. So again, this management plan is oriented only at large-scale development. It obviously doesn't remove land from the county, and in terms of development potential, what it removes is the potential for a large destination resort or the potential for a relatively large non-resort residential development, which would require a plan amendment normally. It takes that off the table. And in terms of other uses that would involve a lot of water, it also takes those off the table. And for the reasons that I discussed with regard to the work with our sister agency, Water Resources Department.
Follow up, and then we are over our time, and we will be scheduling a work session on this, and I'm sure Mr. Whitman will be happy to join us again for that, and I'll schedule that after consulting with Jefferson County to respect their time and availability. So one more question, and then let's adjourn for the day.
Going to have to make it a run-on question, then. So
one-part question.
I had a two-parter. Okay, let me pick one. Sorry. I've just lost it now.
Good. Madam Chair,
I did have some questions I wanted to ask, and so I'm hoping we'll get another opportunity.
We will.
Other than in a situation in which we are about to move a bill.
No, I have it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
And yes.
Thank you. Director Whitman, you referenced destination resorts, other types of residential development. Anywhere in your plan do you terminate Measure 49 rights? Anywhere in this bill does it terminate Measure 49 rights? If someone feels they've lost value, they should be compensated or waived?
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, no.
Okay. We will schedule a work session, at which point we will talk about amendments to the bill and give people an opportunity to understand where we seem to be going, and then we'll have a second work session where we'll move the bill, if the committee is so interested in doing that. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate your testimony. Thank you all. Mr. Whitman, thanks.
Madam Chair, when you said he would...
Are we out?
We're adjourned.
I was listening.
He said he'd be happy to come back. It reminded